Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here. I did not actually know, believe it or not, that the Blarney Stone was in Blarney Castle. I didn't know where the Blarney Stone was, and when I came here a couple of times ago, found out it was there. So yesterday, I actually went over to Blarney Castle and, you know, went up and kissed the Blarney Stone. So whether or not I have the gift of eloquence that it's supposedly going to give me, you be the judge if your stone fucking works or not. So I'm going to read a few poems from my books. And I was here the week that Seamus Heaney passed away. I was in court. And I went up, I decided to go to Dublin to pay my respects, and which I did. And I wrote this poem a few days after I got back. And it's called Leaving Seamus Heaney's Funeral. The sky cannot fall in Ireland. It threatens constantly, finger wagging, a constant reminder hastening us into the fog, an upside down heather cape with a peat and bog center. The sky in Ireland is held up by poems and stories rising like warm bread held together by black potato mold, by your furious digging and the rhythmic sounds of shinnok, the tapping of hot black shoes, roughing the cobblestones, reading secrets into the ears of dead poets. Hiding in the ancient cracks, pocking the face of the churches, I turned away from the church and heavily walked towards the wisps of gray-green puddling on the horizon, but the sky had already conceded. It was on the way to becoming a large gray heart, turning into a precise shape and shade that the wind had chosen. I imagined you walking with me, echoing in my ear. No matter, you said. All that is necessary is a sup of whiskey and the brogue of a red-headed girl. And, you know, Seamus Heaney was well known in the States as well. Really, he was an unbelievable poet. So I'm going to, interesting enough, I'm going to read a couple of poems that are, you know, kind of love poems in a way, but they're about loss. And this is called Begin with a Poem and End with a Poem. When it was all over, and we knew it was all moving away, we only needed to look around to see that we had left things scattered everywhere. Blistering embers left smoldering in the weaves of living room rugs, hot cinders searing in the leather in the back seats of cars, hot ash that we had left scattered beneath entrances that we had only penetrated by a few feet. Hot coals haphazardly spread across tabletops and moss pits, blushing on beds and futons, fuming in city alleys and parks, all pulsing in the profound orange-blue rhythms, our music, Italian opera, Yo-Yo Ma, Rachmaninoff, Carly Simon, and the music of poetry read out loud. With words that we feared and we cherished, sounds that splintered our faith in air, language that demanded that we experience beginnings and endings in the same moment. I think 30 years later, we are smarter. We are less smart. I don't know. But I do know that love is what ends love, and we should find some solace in that. Sorry, one more. I know this is open mic, so I don't want to squeeze a lot of time. So I'm going to read The History of Dead Leaves. They flutter with their stories of dangling desperation, of their giddy chippering even through bleak October storms. In September, they whisper of shadowy forebodings, the dread of the fall, the whirling of carefully raked stacks, of burn piles, of the final separation, spinning down to the ground in a grand pirouette, turning catastrophe into a fairy tale. Disaster cannot inhabit a world where veins are celebrated in thick narratives, falling into every direction, swollen with memories of sprout and bloom, the affection shared in the warmth of the early spring breeze, and the profound green above all, the profound green that had come to saturate the world with imagination. Their world is full of revolution from beginning to end, looping and twisting in and out of the curve of time, each leaf into its own destiny, if one dares to watch, if one can dare to watch. to the very end, looking back up into the naked branches, exposing the illusion of unfilled hope waiting to be born again.
Yeah. So that was George Carlog, everyone. Okay, we've got Stephen James Smith.
How you doing? It's good to be back in Oldale. I've been here many times before, but it's been a couple of years, so I was in the area. I'm just going to do one. It's about 3 minutes long, though, so that's okay. And while it might be somewhat about Dublin, it's more about inclusion, so don't try and mob me around like that, you know what I mean? I love Cork as well. Dublin. You are grey brick upon brick full of tarmac and hipster pricks just fence it. All other places pale in comparison or more than some former Saxon carrots in Dublin. Your warmth came too late for John Curry Dublin, are you even sorry Dublin? You're divided by more than the Liffey. You said yes to equality, it's about bloom and time, yet Dublin you always proclaim the cherish all Dublin. Your panties are on Capel Street, compromising any papal feeds Dublin. Jedward, awkward, Dublin. You're more than a settlement on the paddle, but Dublin, what's the crack with cottage shite? Why don't you just admit it, Dublin? You brought back Sam again, but when did you go from the clash of the ash to exchanging gold for clash Dublin, Dublin, Oblina, Balia, Ahaclea, and 180 other tongues your citizens are using the name is okay, me the fortune to all Dublin, where the power is held by too few in the doll. Dublin, when will you revolt again? 1988 wasn't your true millennium, despite the 50p's and milk bottles, Dublin, you're mine, but I'm happy to share you, Dublin. From RTE, TCD, UCD, MUQ62YFSC, and acrimonious Timbabar SDDs, ODs, and OMGs. No longer the second city. Yet you play second fiddle to Google and Guinness to Facebook and on social Twitter. Dublin, look at yourself. Your terror blocks and tenements are an excuse for a solution. Dublin, come here till I tell you. You more than rapid dirt birds and banjax bellies. An R.I. story, but gesture, it's all good. Jays, that's Scotty. A white gold body. McSawyer and the Royal Dublin. I cry for you, Dublin. You're a tough bastard. You're full of the softness of all the people on your streets. Margaret Dunn dancing on O'Connell Street, the Dice Man Tom McGinty mining on Grattan Street, Paddington with his poems, Westmoreland Street and your Mollies, Malones, Ivers and Bloom, to Dave and Sally Sandy Nuts and the Gospel of Kelly, Drew, McKenna and Sheen, the Bars, the Boys of Bemba, being the Galancer Joyce and the Neville and looking out to sea. Snow falling slowly on the deadly last Nevin. Glenn and Marquette the one strongly, the Christy Bren willfully controlling the foot between bitches of homes to your heroines. Brenda Fricker, the city's mother, and Maureen O'Hara, an enchanting mother. Dublin, you are boom and bust, running wild and swift. Dublin, can I trust you? Dublin, your true blue is Harry Clark's cobalt. Dublin, from the thin Lizzie Dicey Willie to floozy and jacuzzi, God fearing. Dublin, shooting down Veronica Gear. Dublin, your bang bang, 40 cuts, Zosimus, a blind street poet. Dublin, you are all of us, and all are yet to come. Says go to the grave, they doesn't have a point. Dublin, remember Stardust and all your wall scene lovers. Big Jim's arms are outstretched to tourism people. Yet are we look at them again, Dublin? Your GPL columns are scarred in the crackle of gunshots, Dublin. Your CCTV will never yield your essence like the shots of Arthur Fields, man on bridge. You are the pool bag towers and the poor showers begging on bachelor's walk. Dublin, you're all talk, yet you have my attention. From Robbie King to Paul and me and Dublin's calling you, Paul McGrath, while some say up the ra. Dublin, bridging gaps with Joyce and Beckett and Finey to Rosie Hackett, Dublin. Paddy Finnegan was forced to sell the big issue on your streets while Daffodil Mulligan was playing the bail on beats. Dublin, you say the lish. Dublin, you're full of the Polish and Brazilian speaking Portuguese, and now the Chinese have turned pronounced reading the Chinatown. Dublin, don't let them down. Dublin, don't forget. No blacks, no dogs, no Irish. Dublin, perish the thought of you being racist. Dublin, could call them as the GPO and as Eddie Vermont, though. Dublin, your bay embraces despite the cell. Field sea, your mountains frame all your natural beauty. Dublin, a whale on Banshee stricken with TB. Dublin, you're European, but you could be Craggy Island in disguise. Gabriel Conway is heading west because of an epiphany. Just saying, Dublin, you only painted your postbox as green as the Abbey Dill on all your dream. Dublin, you're notorious for crampers, senators, and seagulls, the Celtic tigers and septic tanks, the singing high kings and rampaging Vikings. Dublin, come here, take me for a teddy's. and romantic stroll down the pier. Dublin, you're a dancing place, a sprawling space of villages and many faces on the edge of an island that's been eroded by the Atlantic, battling with being romanticised. Dublin, are you dynamic, struggling with identity, changing for the better, changing for us? Don't be scared to change. Don't be scared. We're with you. Always, my friend, my home. Mentioned 50 times in this poem. We live in your written, your city, your creed. We love you most of the time. You see Dublin, you're me. Thanks.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm not a poet. I came across this by accident tonight, but I really enjoyed it. It's lovely to see everyone so concentrated in just one space, you know. So I'm going to read some poems. It's funny, Shane, is it Shane first poet tonight? Yeah, Shane was talking about Spain. I was living in northern Spain as well, in Santiago, you know. I had a friend of mine, Patrick McCrane, he was a poet from Monaghan as well, and Monaghan was mentioned tonight. And I think Patrick would be very surprised to hear his poetry read tonight, 8 years after he died. He was a very humble man, very quiet man. He walked on no one's toes. So to think that his echo would be here tonight would surprise him more than anyone. So I just wanted to say, I really enjoyed the poetry tonight. The first poet was lovely to see that kind of energy. I enjoyed George's second poem on love. That was very nice, thanks George. And I really enjoyed Stephen's ballad about Dublin. I remember you filled in its ballad on Dublin as well. So it's just nice to be in the moment, you know, and I was mindful of everyone. So anyway, these are Padraig's poems. He died 8 years ago. He's from Carrickmacross in County Monaghan. So I might go on very short.
Yeah, just a couple would be fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't rehearsed these or whatever, but this is his book of poetry. The first one is called Loop. The moon with its purple socks, policemen feeling promiscuously in my pockets on a Monday night. Fuck off, cop. Okay, the second one is called Anger. After stone, bronze, forged symmetries in steel, and the years of sorcery in glass, he discovered wood. When struck, it echoed perfectly the resonances in his mind. In the beginning, he made animals in deformed shapes, one-eyed birds, fish gasping for water, until that one human face, violently blinded in wood, became his final medium. I like this one. This one kind of, you know, resonates about life on a farm, especially in a place like Monaghan or any place in Ireland. It's called The Farmer. The calf was born with four heads. The cow stared and slowly licked and licked each one for hours until its death. The farmer dug a hole in the field, worked for years after on the same farm, never mentioned what he'd seen. And this is the last one, and you know, kind of going from where George left off on the second point, Lover. Okay. A door in dark opens, a white string of pearl for a woman's neck. I am back in the landscape of you. Between me and the one I touch, a gulf opens. Thank you.
I thought that was a great finish. We've got a good few pulps to go yet, so we'll try and two or three minutes each. Ray Hanrahan.
Thank you. is one I wrote a good few years back about a famous Dubliner, former Taoiseach of ours called Bertie Ahern. So it's called Voyage to the Void. Visiting the mental universe of Bertie Ahern or his likes is the package holiday from hell. No brochure or postcard could fully prepare you for the horror. Not only is there no hotel, no restaurant, no nightclubs, there is also no beach, no scenery, no sun. Your companions in the cramped darkness all say he's a great man, a man of the people, yet no one there has actually talked to him, and even there he does not deign to meet us. All our spending money has been stolen, and our credit cards have been ripped off, but our friends here swear they're having the time of their lives. Now I'm home, I still don't get it. How come no one notices while they're there the greedy emptiness, the absence of vision? And for all the cost of the trip, I don't have so much as a fucking photograph.
Hi guys, I really don't think I should read this one. It's called My Cynical Valedictorian Speech. It's called My Cynical Valedictorian Speech. I fantasize about reading this to my art school. My Cynical Valedictorian Speech. You have to follow your dreams, or else you will never find, it seems, that they are all dead ends, and that your strongest critics are your kindest friends. Otherwise, you will never fully appreciate the grounded occupation that you were originally blessed with, your entitled piece of crap. I have a short one about America. I don't know if you want another one about America. The Pentagon has decided yet another threat. Their synopsis is based upon following the threads of the Persian carpet they have unraveled like a beastly domesticated pet. Don't take it to heart, America. It's not you, but just another rich man's bet.
Flying in the face of all is good. The complete name calling over wonder drugs. Pitching in emergencies, a caring tribe. Goes where none goes before, twisting circumstance. An ordeal by warmth, not counting the minutes. Raised by wolves, an excuse for domination. Blood and gore on the floor, a traitor's kiss. Intertwined salvation done just in time. The dead actors not needing the money. The furious interiors, the local dick, the joke long over, turn and face wall. Cracking wood over fireplaces in the latter years of boredom, sick to the touch, forever wanting, vomiting permission to be as I want. Feet in agony, forced in the journey, in comfortable shoes, taking on the sins of cheap purchases by one, by twice. starting through tools and unholy oasis, limping over distance in necessary fashion. A coupling doubly of life, bridging similarities. Stories of one workmanship hit the spots. Food of the family, identity postpartum. Victorious and defeat of a lesser god. Ecstasy through entrails drawing out. Thank you.
Last week my poetry was knocked back quite a bit for personal reasons. These things happen, the industry. So I'm just going to read out something that from the top of my head. And I'm sure some of you already know this poem, but I'm just going to read it out because I have to do something good now. Spread back my confidence. The moth effect. Pleasant are the times when you try to fish for moths. With a light bulb dangling from a fishing rod, with its power being run straight from your heart, as a razor dangles in the cliff edge away from the storm. And only one comes from the dark. Its wings flap madly like a candle flame battling to stay alive after the puff of the lips. Admiring its delicate, flawed architecture, but also your power, pride, and self-perspective. Shall you crack it between the point of your finger and the plaster wall? You never hear the consequences, as the moth effect is silent. Thank you.
Well, this one has rather life, imagery, and some color. So I was going for something a bit lighter. Anyway, it's called Little Richard's Rich. Slut then, denying being a slut, obsessing like a slot machine. Each jerk of his wrist, a chance to find her purse slip. She wasn't more of a gold digger than him, a gnaw dog. Rather, he was the pretty dagger she used to dig her own livelihood with. He'd poke it, flicking a bill, pique her interest. She would feign the hook, billing the flick. She'd unpack the goods. Let him drool over the pecs he'd give her, the wettest dream he'd never navigate. She would honor his pick. Help the twisted dreamer dock, and polish the deck and the mast. Sail back out until his sword heaven were split, then rain down with a splat. Sorry for himself, unable to ignore the splotch. She would wait in silence, for wits are unwelcome now. Manning up would be his task once the connection cut on his meaningless relationship, the morning after.
Nice freedom! The pride of Eva Larry.
Short form with my mother, and I do short, stupid song after if I can. And I do fast. You know, years I did in rehab, and she's always drawing clocks with memories, very visual thing. And then, you know, for the stroke, they draw half a face, you know, but show you where their brain was. So it was my mother then one day. So it's Elu Mahalina, the escape of the arts. A robin picks his way through a snowy ledge. She watches. We smooth on a jasmine queen. I feel like a passenger, only half myself. I'm a Picasso sort of me. But maybe mum, your Queen Nefertiti, with your fine bone structure and your profile beauty. You draw for me the inner portrait that you see. Have no fear of precision's grip. The sable brush will blend what's true to you. I'll stay by your side, rest your hand in mine. blue turquoise strokes a half-filled portrait. So large, so hard, these buttons that cloak this coat. There's a diagnostic image to see. Her eyes shimmer a lacquery blue tear. Draw this clock to unwind where your memory lies and your timeline. Alison Krauss seemed to honey mellow the air and sing, "You always seem to find my better side," and she sang it for us. Do what your senses love to do. There's no side effects. Pain needs pleasure. But the prescription is mandatory. Discovery of hidden treasure. Eilun and Halina will sing your escape, for beauty is soldered with suffering. The terracotta warrior is broken but endures. Titian captured his ruby russets by playing a Russian roulette to use toxic pigment. Art will win through with the budding of the trees and falling of the leaves. Your self-portrait will be restored and resealed. And in bold red outlines, recapture your balance and see your whole picture once more revealed. So I'll distribute shots off. Being really fucked up in hospital and never tell you how lucky you really are. My son was at zero after 3 years ago, and they queued up and said, "Do you know how lucky, you're a lucky boy." And look at Harry, I said, "Yes, it's a mom with another present." So I wrote this for my son to cheer him up, and if I can remember it. Do you realize how lucky you are? You're haunted by luck, so you are. Lying there in your profiler bed with only 9 fractures. Could be 20 times worse. The man over there is the way worse. He lost both of his legs and he burst his nose, his best feature. Do you realize how lucky you are? Lying there, meet your lucky star. I'm responsive to any old opiate paste painkiller. Could be 6 foot under by now. In your foxy box pushing the stores. And if you don't realize that by now, by golly, we tell ya. Lined up in the queue, we're here to dutifully tell ya. You guys will look you up.
Explanation. Dre's testing is an acute toxicity test, which is basically putting a caustic substance into a rabbit's eye, waiting a couple of hours, and then seeing how much it's burned. So this is Junkie Bunny. Shivering and with ever-twitching noses, the Junkie Bunnies lope up the street. A mother's screaming fingers snatch back a child's wandering hand as the jumped-up, hopped-out procession shambled by. In the pearlescent light of their opaque eyes, Dr. Dre's looms. A disjointed scorpion with a syringe for a stinger, he burns a caustic pathway through them. Unbeknownst below him in the sewer, a marquee squats, bloated and pigtailed with a bucket of battery acid and a scouring pad in her small childlike hands. In a field nearby, 3 cows take abortion pills. The first expels her rape child, vomiting a bloody fetus on the farmer's doorstep. The farm dogs drag it off before dawn, but for 3 days the calf-shaped bloodstain remains. The second is overcome and drowns in a neighboring stream. The water tinkles lightly over her hide. The third cow waits and is milked the following morning. Come afternoon, the silence is shorn by the maudlin screams of the farmer's wife as the agony of miscarriage racks through her. The third cow smiles and returns to the hood.
Not usually inclined to come up here, but I haven't written poetry in quite some time, but all the political things that came up in the 5-word challenge inspired me to recite a quick epigram from the Latin poet Martial. Martial had nothing on Ezra Pound had nothing on Marshall. He was able to use the strict meters in Latin to write poems in one line only often, never mind two, that had sense in themselves and were recognizable as verse. One of the earliest of these is the line, Calvo terpius est nihil comato, and I'll offer a translation in the same verse form. Nothing is uglier than Baldi's hair. You can guess to whom that applies from the challenge.
Our final poet of the night is Kieran McCartan.
I'm not going to be the last poet.
Maybe.
Eight.
Sorry, man.
When emigration is state policy, outlawing abortion is manageable. It doesn't matter how many are born, we'll have them bred to fly. And when they reach 25, we'll wave at their planes in the sky. They suffer until 35. We'll sell them a sliver of our pie, marketed as a slice. This is your reward for your well-thrown dice. Who'll work below deck if we've killed all the shoulders before they've grown enough to be put to the wheel? Who'll stand and cheer for the second tier if they've died without a chance to cry or open an eye? Before they could lend an ear or they could live in fear. Before they could sleep at the feet of Big Jim Larkin or beg on O'Connell Bridge and dream that they heard Big Jim Harkin give this man a job and a living wage, one fitting of his gifts and his age. And wait to the welcome of a mouse wheel, a piece of cheese, a trap, and a cage. And if you don't like the feel of the pavement, why don't you try enslavement? You can be the monumentous apprentice we've been waiting for. You won't get paid, but we will shout idle praise from behind a locked door and tell you what's in store if you work a little more. You're nearly ready for a meeting with the careers department. It's just after the arrears department. You take a left off the M50 and you go straight up from there. And get up all out of our airspace, because we don't want you anymore. Don't get hit too hard by the swinging door. We gave you what we had to make your mum feel brave. She had you, and then go off and be a dadger somewhere else. For we've enough babies here. They're over there on the shelf marked unwanted. And soon they'll be in the hands of the state, who'll serve them on a plate to a top-tiered stranger. These will work the hell, yeah, it's female. And from a distant shore it's hard not to ignore the moans of Mother Era, crying in despair, raped at the hands of the worst, and growing once more ever wider in the girth. For there's not pro-life, but pro-birth.
Pretty quick poem called Catholic Honor Killings. It's concerning the Chum babies event that happened there a few years ago. Catholic Honor Killings. Honor Killings, Irish style, this week in Chum, the Sisters of No Mercy strike again. Not shocking news to me, I remember the disappeared, the whispered rumors of headscarf women, men cap in hand kneeling at the door. One leg inside to reverse the cross of hell, one outside to ogle the girls who fell, bound for London or some place like June. When the call to prayer rang at six,
We mumbled along, fearful not to mouth the words. Mary took the boat. She got in trouble, I heard the elders say. I knew that meant London. Ruled by shame and fear of God, they left the sod to wander like a new lost tribe. Family law drafted by McQuaid had a special place, said Dave, in our own shire. The hijab woman bowed her head in shame, awaiting to be churched. Let him without sin cast the first stone, said the book. The metaphorical stones are raining on us now. Did the two babies die with original sin before the splash of holy water to languish forever in limbo? We're all in limbo now.
The women of Ballacruar, they never filled their heads with yellow and pink rollers, letting on to be going somewhere when there was no somewhere to go. Somewhere was where other women went, women with magnolia vision and pencil-shaped dreams, and always a Jezebel cigarette between their blood-red lips. The women of Ballacruar had a loving God, whom they duly served every waking second. They implored their God, followed their vagabond sins down the alleyways of Cricklewood, Camden Town, and further afield. These women with no rulers implored their God to keep their daughters in a state of grace until the wedding night, and not to let shame fall on their family by any daughter of theirs waddled down the aisle with a belly full of baby. For these favours sought, the women of Ballacruar had their knuckles worn inside out, making God's altar shine. He kept them busy. They praised him often, at doorways with arms folded, at the bus stop, at the solemn novena, or anywhere that resembled a cross, a ditch, a boreen, or a bog. Except for Mrs. All Over Hurt, whose only interest was in a little brown bottle which she tossed to her tree, those beauties into her bag. They brought instant rapture that took away the rasping pain of the day. The other women's God allowed her only son to kiss the face of a raging truck. These women with no rulers didn't let on to be going somewhere when there was no somewhere to go. This was Ballacruar, where they had a loving God to polish and die for.